All right, good morning. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday. I can't believe it's October. October 3rd, 2017. Before we do the pledge, if we could just take a moment of silent reflection, all those impacted in Las Vegas with that crash. Thank you. Now, please join the board as we honor America with Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning. Public comment number one is always first for us. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda or really anything else. Anybody wishing to do so can come right on up. And seeing no one apparently moving to the microphone, we'll go to consideration of the Healthiest State Annual Walk Proclamation. And Noelle just walked out. We worked really hard. Noelle's worked really hard to put this together. In fact, we're doing walks, Alyssa, at four of our locations tomorrow and participating. But I'll just read this real quick. Whereas, the Healthiest State Initiative has set an ambitious goal for Iowa to become the healthiest state in the nation, and whereas, the Healthiest State Initiative aims to do this by improving the physical, social, and emotional well-being of Iowans, and whereas, walking helps to manage weight, improve strength and physical fitness, and whereas, group walking allows for improving social and emotional well-being by providing support and connection, and whereas, walking 30 minutes a day can improve your overall health as we strive to become the healthiest state of the nation. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Rick Sanders, Chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors and the entire Board of Supervisors of Story County, do hereby announce and proclaim to all citizens and set seal here too that October 4th, 2017 is Healthiest State Annual Walk Day in Story County, Iowa. All citizens are encouraged to join us to walk for 30 minutes and improve their physical, social, and emotional health. Our walks begin at our four locations at 11 a.m. That would be the Justice Center here at the Administration Building, out at the Human Services Building in Ames, and up at McFarland Park. Is that right? Those are our four. Citizens are invited to participate. I know that Marty and I will be participating in a couple of them. Loris, I think, will be providing emotional support for all of them, since Loris is not much of a get-out-and-just-walk.
No, we'd have to schedule all day for that.
So, board, I would take a motion to adopt the Healthiest State Walk Proclamation.
I would move that we adopt the Healthiest State Annual Walk Proclamation as was presented today.
I'll second.
A motion to second. Further discussion?
None.
Good job by everybody. This is an important thing to do and should be a good thing for Story County staff members. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. You guys both have a place to sign. Two places to sign there. Consideration of minutes from the 26th.
So moved.
Aye. Second.
Anything to note? Looked like you guys had a really long meeting in my absence.
We saved the taxpayers.
Yes, right.
That's good stuff. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims.
As presented.
I would second. I'd just like to point out there were a couple of items on there. One is that on the claims, the electronic one that went on the website, there was missing $15,000. Which was actually to pay for school board election workers, but it is on our copy that we're signing.
Okay.
So noted.
Thank you. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims passed. This is the shortest consent agenda in the 8 years that I've been here. This is easily the shortest consent agenda.
I would move for approval of the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Public hearing item, second consideration of Ordinance 263, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa for Resolution 1835, which has already passed, the proposed Dayton Park Major Subdivision Preliminary Plat and the Gibbons Rezoning. Emily?
I can go through the presentation if you want. Otherwise, we have not received any additional comments from the public.
Yeah, so we spent, a good hour and 20 minutes on this two weeks ago. Board, it's your appetite. I don't need to hear it all again.
I think staff did a good job of presenting, and I think that the residents who were here who had concerns and were in opposition did an excellent job of putting out their case. So I don't need to hear it again.
No, I would think that... I would make the motion.
Well, we're going to do a public hearing first before you make the motion. At this point, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance Number 263, second consideration. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close and turn to the board for action. Now you're on.
I would move consideration of Ordinance 263, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, and moving Resolution 1835, the proposed Dayton Park Major Subdivision Preliminary Plat for the Gibbons Rezoning as presented.
I would second.
I would make a motion. I would amend my motion to waive third reading.
I would second that also.
Okay. We're not doing anything with 1835. We've already done that.
That's
so now we're dealing with 263 second reading. We got a motion to approve 263 on second reading and waive third and final reading, which would in fact make Ordinance 263 enacted if it passes here. Everybody good on that?
Yes.
Any further discussion?
None.
Mr. Gibbons, you have anything you want to say before we vote? Okay. Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Ordinance 263 passes. Third reading is waived. Therefore, Ordinance 263 is now in effect. Emily, good job. Thanks.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate the time.
That was a little more painless than last time, wasn't it? All right, now we've got second consideration of Ordinance 264, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County. Then this is for Resolution 1836, which already passed, the Lowman's 4th Minor Subdivision Final Plat. Same deal.
Same deal.
No comments, nothing to add.
We have not received any additional comments.
Board, do we need to hear anything else?
I think we gave the same amount of consideration, and the fact that there was a lot of crosstalk that I think led to some agreement was... I mean, that was one of those things you don't see very often, that the negotiations took place in front of us to get to, I think, having a place for both parties. So.
Yeah, I agree. And thanks for the staff's involvement in that and helping clarify actually what the rules were and what was a voluntary thing or a private.
Both of these had some issues attached to them that you don't see that often. And I think that it's a reflection on the fact that you get to educate not only the parties but us. So thanks.
Super. All right, we're going to open the public hearing, see if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 264. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing, turn to the board for action.
I would move Ordinance 264 second reading and waiving of third reading, and the proposed Story County zoning map amendment from the AR Agricultural Residential District with conditions to AR Agricultural Residential District without conditions as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ordinance 264 passes. Third and final reading is waived. Therefore, Ordinance 264 is, in fact, enacted.
Thank you.
Thanks. Additional items. Discussion consideration of adding a deputy sheriff position within the Story County Sheriff's Office. Paul Fitzgerald and Barry Toss.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Gentlemen? Holy cow. Good morning.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to present to you this morning. What this request comes about as last month I was at a Joint Terrorism Task Force meeting at the, hosted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Des Moines. And after that meeting, the management of the FBI wanted to speak with me. So in talking with them, they're involved in the Central Iowa Violent Gang Task Force. And They stated that the reputation the Story County Sheriff's Office has, how they've worked with us over the years. They asked if I would consider putting a deputy full-time into this position to work with the gang task force. There are certain benefits that the FBI pays. They furnish a vehicle. They pay overtime for any hours worked. Basically, what we pay is salary and benefits of a normal employee. And other things such as equipment and things that would come to this job would be paid for by the FBI, and then would become the property of Story County. So with these factors in place, with there are times where we have shortages in our patrol division. As we've grown over the last 25 years that I've been sheriff, we, the more employees you have, the more FMLA you have, the more military leave you have, the more time that you're recruiting and training and hiring, and it's difficult to run at full staff even when you have the positions there. So anyway, to consider this and not put any more undue stress on the patrol division, I asked the Board of Supervisors to grant a new deputy sheriff position, which will be used to backfill the road when I assign someone to the violent gang task force sponsored by the FBI. Anything else?
So you have an individual identified within your department already?
I have one that I have not talked with him yet, but one I think that is uniquely skilled and qualified to fit that role. But we'll have to see what he says. But I have several personnel that would be able to do a good job in that position.
All right. So our patrol division has been at its current strength for years and years and years, Sheriff. Take us through that. So we've grown in other areas in the Sheriff's Department, but let's talk about patrol for a
minute. Well, and giving a little bit of history here.
Sure.
Before we moved out to the Justice Center in 2002, we had grown the patrol division to 18. That meant three deputy sheriffs and three patrol sergeants. And that's where we sit today. Now, when we first moved out to the Justice Center, the staffing to operate the jail, they could not give me full staffing. So I had to butcher some of the other parts of the department. I took two out of patrol. I took two out of dispatch. I discontinued the DARE, the school resource officer position, and put those people back in the jail to fill posts. Then as time went on and the board was able to work with us to get those positions back, then we migrated back. But we've been at the 18 in patrol now, and it's been like that for most of my tenure as sheriff. You've seen what happened when a couple years ago you gave us the dispatch position back that we had lost, and our overtime literally just went away. And we find ourselves short there again right now because of FMLA and things like this. So it's just a continuing cycle. But the patrol division, January of 2016, we started an Interpol project. And I signed a deputy as a detailee to Washington, D.C., and they worked with Washington Interpol. My first deputy there was, who's now Sergeant Elizabeth Quinn. She worked in human trafficking and child protection. So now she's working with us on the state human trafficking task force and these types of benefits. We've had two other people that have been detailed to Washington, but I had told Interpol at the start of this summer, in start of August, we would not be able to put someone back because I'm down in patrol. So they told us that whenever we get the strength back, we're welcome back. They love to have us. They like working with Story County, and but they understand my first need is here in Story County. So right now we don't have the Interpol position filled. We're trying to maintain a strong staff at home, and until we get through some military and FMLA issues, we're going to be having our people here.
Paul, I was at the McCallsburg City Council meeting last night, and one of your deputies was there, just giving the report that they do to the various city councils. And he made a remark, and it kind of caught me because I knew this was on the agenda today, so I just wanted to clarify here that he made a remark about having been down one deputy for a long time, he felt, like, you know, in your department. And that now, as of January, he said there's a new one going to the training academy or graduating from. It was a little unclear, but he said we'll be back up to full strength. Mm-hmm. So just to make certain everybody understands that this position would not really bring the department above full strength, because you'd be taking one person out to send somewhere else.
That is correct. This request is so I can assign someone full time to the FBI Violent Gang Task Force.
My other thought that might be good to know more about is when I think about gangs, I think about downtown or central Des Moines. But it's a Central Iowa Gang Task Force.
Yes.
So can you kind of enlighten, as is you feel comfortable, in why this would be something that would benefit the residents of Story County?
Well, in 1992, the Department of Justice created the Safe Streets Violent Gang Initiative. And throughout America, in each state, they have, through their FBI resident offices, they work with other federal agencies, with state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies to pull this together so everyone has a little skin in the game, so to speak. Now, what we've seen since 1992, Story County was a pretty quiet place and not really a lot happened. But we're not in the same place we were in 1992. The world is not in the same place we've seen in 1992. Last Sunday certainly reminded us of that here. So now we're in a position where just a few months ago we've seen some individuals from Fort Dodge come down and have a shooting. Ames Police was involved in a shootout with them in Ames. And as the FBI articulated to us, is that it's kind of a triangle, and it just so happens Story County is right in the middle of that triangle. So that triangle being Fort Dodge, Marshalltown, and Des Moines. And for the northern part of the Central Iowa Drug Task Force, we represented of the agencies they could have gone to, they came to Story County and asked us.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so, Board, let's just be really clear, and I know that you guys are aware of this, but clear for the public. So the sheriff has statutory authority to assign his personnel wherever he deems appropriate. So where this request is coming to the board is not whether it makes sense or not for us to have somebody assigned to the FBI Central Iowa Drug Task Force, which I happen to think it does. It's recognition that we're already as bare bones as we can be in our patrol division, and so for the sheriff to be able to make the decision that he's empowered to make and put somebody on that task force, the board has the authority to approve positions. So I asked Alyssa to look at this and just make sure that we weren't missing something, that there wasn't a way we could backfill. You got anything that you want to say? We're as bare bones as we can be staffing-wise on patrol, right? And so if we are going to have one move to go to the gang track task force, the sheriff decides that, we need to backfill or we're going to be shorthanded. Further questions?
Will this position be based out of the Justice Center?
Where will this individual start his day, end his day, he or she?
Well, when you're involved in a task force, that's kind of a roaming question.
That's why I'd like to be pleased to inform me.
But their office would be out of the FBI offices in Des Moines.
Okay.
And they'll be going through to obtain top secret security clearances, so that will give them access to the FBI and DOJ's databases for the work they do in working within the task forces and things of this nature.
I think it's important to know also that since they are always our employee, if we have needs back here, we have the right to pull them back, and the FBI understands that full well. Also, one thing that's very nice for us, if we do participate in this, if there's something where Story County has a need, we have the resources of the FBI. Because of our membership on that task force, they will come and give us all they have to help us with the things we're dealing with right here in Story County.
We can expect that reciprocity just by taking this position out.
Correct.
And your written explanation just talked about this being indefinite. And Mary referred to we could pull back someone when we needed to pull, if we needed to pull someone back. Otherwise, this is not like it's a 1 year.
No, because my intention here is to stay in partnership with the FBI and the other federal agencies that are involved with this, the U.S. Marshals, DEA, and things of that nature. So when we get, when we need a support, as Captain Thomas just said, the FBI is somewhat limited where they just don't go out to agencies to help on all requests. There has to be some kind of federal nexus. But since our office is involved full-time with the task force, we would get little special recognition. Should we need that, the assets and resources by the federal government would be here to help us in Story County.
Do we have a dollar amount estimated about what an additional deputy will cost?
County?
$75,000.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Like that would be. This is money coming out of general, as I understand, because the pays for the 18 road deputies and four deputies, four detectives. So.
Yeah, the way I understand it is whoever would be assigned to the drug task force would probably roll to the general fund. Their salary and benefits would roll to the general fund. Mm-hmm. And in a new position, if one is created, we start with 18 in the rural fund and then end with 18 in the rural fund. It wouldn't cost our rural residents anything doing this. If the cost would be to our general fund.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, one last thing I'd like to say, too, is you guys make consideration for this. You know, within the sheriff's office walls, we try to determine the best way to allocate our resources to keep the citizens of Story County safe. A lot of time we have to be reactive in what we do because that's just the nature of our business. But when we get the opportunity to work closely with a partner that helps us gain intel where we can proactively help keep the citizens of Story County safe, that's something that's paramount for us to be involved in. So we hope that you guys would consider helping us have those resources so we can make that happen to keep the citizens of Story County safer.
So I think it's a great point, and I think I should have started with this, and I didn't. What a huge credit to you guys, Sheriff Fitzgerald, to you, Barry, to you, our whole sheriff's office, but really Story County as a whole, that the FBI would seek us out to participate in this. It speaks to the complete professionalism and credibility that your office carries. And we're all better because of that. So thank you for that, absolutely.
Thank you.
And so if there's nothing further, I'd take a motion to add the deputy position. Now, I would like included in that motion, if one of you are willing to make it, that this would be revisited if there is ever a time that we're not participating in the Central Iowa Drug Task Force. So it's not a position that we're just creating in perpetuity. It's tied very clearly to our participation in the gang task force.
Okay. We live in a different world. And I'm glad I got to hear your deputy speak from his perspective just in an update last night. So I will make that motion. Okay. I move that we add a deputy position to do backfill for the department to be able to assign a officer or deputy to the Central Iowa Gang Task Force, and that this position be applicable as long as there is an employee of the Story County Sheriff's Department working with the FBI Gang Task Force. Thank you.
Effective date of
January 1st, correct? 2018. Yes. Thanks, Shelley.
I'm sorry we live in those times and this has found our communities, but it is in Story County and this is how we address it. So I will second that motion.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Sheriff, anything to add as we vote on this?
No, I just, again, appreciate the board's consideration and open us to hearing us out and seeing the need that we have.
Well, thank you for putting Story County in the position we're in. Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Position will be added as of January 1st.
Thank you very much.
Next item is discussion consideration of final plans and specifications for two secondary roads buildings in Kelly and Roland. I was joking with Darren when he walked in. Feels like we've been working on this about 5 years now, Darren. And I don't know that I'm that far off.
That sounds about right to me. I think we're getting towards the end here. I brought Chad West with me with the Halo Architecture.
Hey, Chad.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I just put a couple slides together and give you a general idea of what the buildings would look like. As you recall, we're looking at two buildings, one in Kelly and one in Roland. I'll start with the Kelly building. Our initial goal is to get a 82-foot by 60-foot building in place, and we were able to accomplish that with the Kelly site. You can see the dark line there. The entire lot is shown there. It's a rectangular that goes over to Kelly city limits. And then you can see the gravel driveway. We'll have to build an additional driveway to the south to accommodate our turning movements. But we're able to fit in the 82 by 60-foot building. We did have a couple of issues with setbacks to meet the county guidelines, but we also wanted to hook on to city sanitary sewer system of Kelly's. So we approached them about annexation. Went to their council meeting last month, and there was really no issues with annexation. They had two concerns. One, are they taking on additional road maintenance by annexing it? No, they're under 500 population, so the county maintains the road through Kelly anyway. So they're happy to hear there are no additional road maintenance, and they wanted to make sure they weren't going to be responsible for any of the cost to hook on to the sewer, and we are taking the line all the way into town and hooking on, so there would be no cost to Kelly with there. So they were all for it. They do need to hold a public hearing, which would be next Tuesday night, to meet the hearing requirements. But it doesn't sound like there'd be any issues there, so we decided we should just move forward. If we have to fall back, we do have the potential septic site back there shown that can still be used if need be, but we don't expect that to happen. Should find out for sure next week. Kelly was also glad to hear by extending that sewer out, they've always wanted to hook on that gas station bar area out there to the sanitary as well, so this would help reduce some of their costs to hook that on if they want to do that. So they did like that aspect. Moving on to the Roland site, this one had a bit of a tighter lot to fit in. The existing building doesn't show there, but the proposed building overlapped the existing by about 10 feet, so the existing building does have to be demolished and removed from the site. That building off to the right, you see, that's the existing car wash. That is not part of our lot. We did have to put a 10-foot setback around the north and the east side there, which pushed us down a little bit further south. But we did end up with a 4-bay building, which is what we wanted, but we did have to reduce the size to make it fit. So that one is an 84 by 48-foot depth, so we shrunk the depth by 12 foot on that one, which will still work for our needs. As shown here, the one on the left is the Kelly building, and the one on the right would be the Roland building. You can see the Roland building still fits the motor grader. We'd still be able to even put the V-plow on the front of that motor grader, which is important in the winter, that we need to melt the snow off the V-plow when we pull it in. So that would still fit even. Now, on the Kelly site, the plan is the motor grader or a truck will fit in there, but we can also park additional vehicles on the backside. So it'll give us a lot of additional storage, heated storage for our equipment. And then below shows the kind of schematic what the building will look like. Pretty basic building, but that's what we need.
Darren, when I rode with the this winter for the last snowstorm, and I went to actually obviously the Nevada shed, but then we went to the Mason or Ames shed also. Okay, and it was pointed out about how tight it gets in those sheds. And the difficulty that the
operators have sometimes in maneuvering around the equipment in the, because of the shortness of the old sheds. On the Roland one, it looks like there's still room to maneuver. What is that, 2 or 3 feet on both the front and back end in that second one for Roland?
Definitely. Like I said, there's a 48-foot depth there. Our existing buildings, I'm trying to think what they are. They're maybe 30 feet. It's a lot of additional room.
Even the rolling shed is substantially bigger than anything we have of any of our outbuildings.
Okay. All right.
It's real similar to our main shop. Our main shop's 50-foot depth, so it's only 2 foot different. Our main shop has plenty of room to maneuver. So definitely meets our needs. So the next step is... the next item on the board agenda is to approve the actual letting date for October 31st. If you go ahead and approve the bid specs and the plans here, and if we did that, Halo would actually hold a pre-bid meeting in 2 weeks with prospective bidders, and then the letting would be held on October 31st. So the last thing to talk about is the cost estimate, and Chad brought an updated copy with him on that. I did give you each a copy of that on your desk there. The top number would be the new numbers. So the Kelly's at $731,000 and Roland's at $504,000. So that puts us about $1.2 million. We did originally budget $350,000 a piece, but we really didn't know what we were getting into at that point. We don't do buildings much, so we didn't know what we were getting into, but I don't see a whole lot that we can reduce here, so I think we've got our basic needs met, and I don't see a lot of reductions that could be done, so this is probably what we need to spend if we're going to do this.
And these are dollars, Darren, that through the years you've been wise with putting dollars away that are available to do this.
Yeah.
Do you have these kind of dollars available, or are we going to have to go dig into the general fund to find additional dollars?
We're just going to have to amend our current budget. We've got that carryover balance we've been holding for quite a while that definitely is.
We've had a balance that's probably a little high.
Yeah.
An ending fund balance has been a little high with these buildings in mind, but you think you can absorb it within that if we do an amendment?
Sure. Yep.
And in doing that, we're not having to back off from any projects, correct?
Oh, correct. Like I said, this has been a work for many, many years, so we've been planning for this for a long time, and it hasn't impacted our construction budget.
Chad, you have raised your contingencies on both buildings. Can you tell me why?
Are you referring to the...
unknowns and contingencies.
I'm sorry?
Your unknown is under unknowns and contingencies.
Oh, the construction contingency?
Yes.
Often we recommend that a 5% is included as a contingency for, you know, unknown conditions that you might run across, changes that might need to be made. And that is just a reflection, that percentage is a reflection on, it's a multiplier of the final cost opinion. So that's why that number would have gone up since the last time you saw. It's 5% of the 731 versus maybe the last number that you saw.
Is that what you're seeing on a year-over basis? I mean, we always sit there and we talk about construction, and do we or don't we? And
sure.
We kind of kick around, you hear numbers offered up. I mean, what are you seeing out there as far on a planning basis that you didn't expect if you were to do something this year versus next year? What percent would you offer up just as your experience?
And let me make sure I understand your question. So when we list construction contingency, that is for changes that you might make during construction?
No, I get that. I've done this before. But I'm just asking you on an industry basis. So, you know, we're always wondering what the final cost of doing something is. And we always say, okay, it's going to be 4% more if we wait till next year. What number are you seeing?
Sure, So in terms of inflation, if we were to wait, we're seeing anywhere from 3 to 5% in the construction industry.
For the very same thing, just waiting a year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
I guess I would comment, too, the way the specs are set up is we have a June 15th completion date for both buildings, so that would keep us in the fiscal year with the dollars.
Further questions or discussion and consideration of the final plan. So our first action, if we're going to take one, is approval of the final plans. and specifications. And if we approve that, then we'll move on to the next, which would be setting a bid date.
I don't have a problem with making a motion to approve the final plans as presented.
I'll second that. I'm placing a lot of trust, you know, in you two because I don't know what I'm looking at, really. I mean, when you get down to the actual, what we were presented with in detail, there are many, many detailed sketches. But this was great up here. Thank you for the summary.
Yeah. So the reality is we got out of the Slater shed 3 years ago or 4 years ago because our equipment would not fit in there anymore. And the building was built in the 1930s. Is that right?
And then earlier they said it was a Model T showroom in the front.
I mean, the reality is it has been a long time since Story County has updated any of its outbuildings. Long overdue to get this done, and I'm excited that we're nearing the end. It looks like we put together a really, really solid plan that will accommodate not only our needs today, but our needs in the at least immediate future and hopefully longer than that. So we got a motion from Marty. Is that right?
Yes.
Second from Boris with trust to
with
these guys.
With trust, yes.
Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. So we approve the final plans and specifications. Now it takes us to our next item, which is consideration of setting a bid opening date for secondary roads buildings that we just approved the final plans for October 31st, happy Halloween, at 10 a.m. right here.
I would move that we set the bid date for October 31st.
And Marty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Next is discussion consideration of a temporary animal shelter attendant. We've got Sue with us today to talk about a temporary animal shelter attendant. And Alyssa, of course, since it's involving personnel.
Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. Hello.
All right, so we've got somebody going out on maternity.
Yep, another person having a baby. First of all, I'd like to start off by saying, since I've been here, which is almost 25 years, this is the biggest amount of animals we've ever had come into the shelter. We've never had it like this before. We don't even know where they're coming from. We have spay and neuter dates that we set people up with that we've been trying to, you know, help get the population. It's cats mostly under control. But it has been a very busy year. And with that being said, one of my people that I work with is expecting a baby, and she will be taking probably the end of December and then January, February, and into March as far as it goes. I look for us to keep this amount of animals. We're having adoptions. There's no doubt about it, but they're coming in quicker than we can kind of keep up at this point. It will settle down, but unfortunately it won't settle down until about February or March. And with her being gone, we're losing our... somebody has to be at shelter every single day, all the time. Holidays, we're on call 24 hours a day, but holidays especially, there has to be somebody go twice a day. And so what it boils down to is not having this person there. And as the sheriff was speaking before, kind of the same thing, when you've got longevity with your employees, there's vacations that are being used and, you know, there's other things going on, and I don't feel we're going to be able to meet what we need to keep the shelter operating. Even having a temporary person is not going to bring us to where we need to be, because we're going to have training and, you know, and everything. They're going to be there to really help, but it's still going to be a shortfall, and I just... For 3 months, if we could possibly, or I think Alyssa figured 14 weeks, not knowing when it would start. But we want a little time to train them beforehand. And so it would be really beneficial for us to be able to have that time in there. four people is going to really short us. We have people that if they work on a Saturday and Sunday, they take that Tuesday off the afternoon. If they work on the following Saturday, they take Wednesday afternoon off. And then you combine sick leave and you combine vacation. And nobody is abusing of it out there, but still, you know, it leaves us in a very short space. And so I was requesting that we maybe get somebody in there that can help fill this gap. We want to be able to keep our, and while this is going on, we're also going to be having the shelter, hopefully some things going on at the shelter that are going to be bringing changes, and there's going to be a lot more activity as far as moving and cleaning and everything, and I just don't feel like we could go with four people at that point.
I agree, and I'm glad, happy to hear that maybe we'll be seeing more on the shelter, that renovations pretty soon. I'm also kind of thinking, as a line here, that I know we talked about longer-term plans, about maybe training a volunteer or two to help, and I'm wondering if training this temporary employee and having a volunteer to come in and learn a little bit also, if that we're able to do, that might just help even further along what you need for your long term, if that works out. So it's just a thought thrown out there.
And we love our volunteers, and we have many. The problem is I think my biggest concern is the weekends, the holidays.
Right.
We're kind of heading into that area where we're going to have, there's a lot more going on. And I feel like an employee is going to be much more dedicated to showing up on the holidays and everything than a volunteer. I mean, volunteers, a lot of our students at Iowa State are volunteers, but, you know, they pack up and go home for Christmas. And so, because I've thought about all the ways we could utilize this to not even have to have this happen, but quite honestly, we have that time that we still have to cover, and Ann and I are on call 24 hours a day, and we kind of shift off with, you know, the weekends and stuff, and I just don't see, we're trying to keep our overtime down, too, how we can do this.
I'm not advocating instead of.
Right. Yes, and our volunteers
train anyway
in more ways than is even imaginable. I mean, they really do. But they're volunteers who want to come from 11 to 4
right
now.
And the animals don't really stay on
And the animals
schedule.
Don't have that time schedule going in their heads. So.
All right, other questions?
None.
And do I have a motion?
You have a motion to move consideration of hiring a temporary animal shelter attendant effective.
I believe it was December 11th.
Middle of December. We'll get through all the pre-employment screening and all that kind of stuff. So middle of December.
And you have the cost outlined there. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Thank you for that.
Middle of December to the middle of March, roughly, mm-hmm. and roughly $10,000.
That's my motion.
And I
motion and a second. Further discussion. Yeah. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved. Good job, Sue.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of the Board of Supervisors appointment process for boards and commission. So this was a new process that was enacted by the board several months ago. I think at that time I said I believe we would revisit this. I expected it to be the entire calendar year of 2017 before we revisited it, but we're back now here at the 1st of October to revisit it. Loris, I believe you put together a proposed revision to the process we're using, so I'm going to have you start this conversation.
Sure. After our first round of following the new process, which was to fill an appointment in the Veterans Affairs Commission, we got some feedback, I saw, first of all, a letter. I think that you guys may have received some verbal feedback, but there was an email sent to all three of us by someone sitting on one of our boards that was very, very concerned about us changing the process. And as a result of that, I offered to meet with this person. Fortunately, this person also has a lot of experience in working with boards and commissions in what was her professional life. So I did meet with this person, and we discussed the concerns. In her letter, she had, or email, had really emphasized a bit about feeling that making the commissioners who are sitting go through the same process as new applicants was not allowing, that we were kind of not giving them credit and not treating them with the proper respect for the fact that they've given volunteer hours already for this, and now did they have to go through an interviewing process again. So when we sat down and talked it out further, there were, in addition to that feeling about that any person who was already serving on a board or commission being asked to go through the same process was somewhat, I don't know if you want to call it demeaning or not appreciative in nature. We talked about a couple of other things that seemed to be a concern, at least to her, and she thought at least one or two other serving commissioners or board members. One of the concerns was that if for some reason the board wanted, or a member of the board, one of us, the board supervisors, was interested in seeing some change on the board, that they didn't want to go through a public process of having to interview and then having a discussion at the board table that a change was desired. And so she made a suggestion about having the discussions be with the interviews, all the interviewees, being somewhat of a consecutive one after the other, one after the other, with each supervisor interviewing separately. And in the event that one or more of the supervisors felt that, geez, maybe it's time to look for a change, or maybe we want a new direction, maybe there's new dynamics involved, all of the things that can come up when a board of supervisors is interested in maybe seeing change for some reason, that would be the time to appropriately let this sitting board or commission member know that we really appreciate your service, but we are interested in maybe moving to another direction, so we're going to be vetting people.
So clarify that for me, because that sounds to me like you're suggesting that the board outside of one of these board meetings would come to some kind of conclusion that they want to make change.
And you are correct. I used we, and let me back off on that, okay, because I can see where you get that impression. No, it would be I, an individual board member at that point. We would have done those discussions, but it might be at that point an indicator, me talking to, you know, B, who's been sitting on, let's say, the Planning and Development Commission for three terms or something, saying, you know, I'm thinking that you've really done good service. I personally would like to see maybe if we could appoint somebody from a different part of the county, or if we've got a gender balance to deal with. So it would be each one of us on an individual basis indicating what if I or you or Marty felt that interested in looking for change.
Right, but that would be exactly one vote looking for
change. That is correct. That is correct. That is correct. That is correct. Right. At that point. So other concerns had to do with the fact that in making all applicants, all applicants, if they have to apply or not, and I think that I had been I had understood that everybody had to fill out an application, but I understand that's not correct. Rick, you say that if someone wants to be reappointed, they don't have to fill out a new application, okay?
That's the way it used to be.
All right. So I had put in the suggestion that everybody fill out an application. Maybe the more appropriate thing to do is to have people just send an email if they are already sitting on a board of commission saying, I'm interested in serving another term and here's why. So it's not a formal application. But, of course, it would still be public record. They're still indicating an interest in being reappointed. So we did talk a lot about the privacy angle for everyone, whether they be a sitting board or commissioner, board member or commissioner, and then also, or whether they be a new applicant. That seemed to be kind of harsh, considering that these were volunteers. And then we went on to how could sitting boards or commission members, let the Board of Supervisors know that they're still interested in a way that they wouldn't have to go through any application process. And then also about having to do interviews, that's where we came up with the idea that, all right, why couldn't Board of Supervisor members individually go out and observe them? Once that a sitting board or commission member had indicated a desire to serve another term, that we make the effort individually to go out and watch them in action.
We should be doing that anyway.
And she had some great suggestions. And then say, hey, can I meet with you for 15 minutes before the board meeting or 15 minutes after? And get any questions we as individuals have to ask on that. And I emphasized, of course, my concerns were, well, with the transparency and just the law, it means that the discussion, at least once each of us have done this interviewing, has to occur at the board table. I mean, we've got to just make the decision at a board table in an open meeting. And that's why she really emphasized that if a particular board member felt that they were not particularly interested in supporting a reappointment, that be made known during those individual discussions, just so that there wasn't such of a surprise, and it might even allow the individual to decide to pull his or her name for consideration. So it really was a discussion about balance between needs for transparency, involving all three supervisors in the process, with the acknowledgement that all three supervisors may not share even the same vision of what would be needed for this board or commission, maybe going in the future, or what would be a good mix. We brought up the fact a little bit and about staff consulting with the directors, doing all three of us individually responsible for checking more with the chair or vice chair of the commission or the board to talk about what the possible needs may be. Certainly, there's a possibility that the Board of Supervisors changes in the membership changes every 2 years. Right now, what we've got is, I don't know that all three of us, because we've never had this discussion, but all three of us would necessarily feel the same people are the best applicants on a board or commission. I know I have a list of criteria, but I don't know that they're your list or Marty's list.
I would think it's a reasonable bet that you and I don't have the same list.
That's right. So to get everyone involved, and then to get then to the process where we would make nominations here at the board, but there would be much more privacy afforded for the applicants or anybody wishing to be reappointed. And
okay, so let's do this for me, Laura.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We just appointed for the VA commission.
Right.
We had three applicants for the VA commission. One of them was a sitting VA commission member, and then two others. We interviewed all three of them here at a board meeting.
Correct.
Then we came back at a future board meeting. They were welcome to be present, but they didn't need to be present. And we had the full discussion. It was a blank slate. It simply said, appoint a VA commissioner. It didn't say who. It didn't say anything about a recommendation. And so then we had that discussion. So tell me, what I'm hearing you say is, the part of that you want to change is you don't want to do the interviews any longer sitting here in a board meeting. You want to do those individually outside of a board meeting. But you would still want to follow the process where it comes forward and it says, appoint a VA commission, and you make a motion to reappoint the person that was in. It dies for lack of a second, which is fairly embarrassing. And then another motion is made for another individual, and that's made. But that would stay the same on what you're proposing here.
Yes, because I can't see any way around it that allows us, all three of us, to equally participate in being able to put forth a candidate. I'm open to suggestions about how that could be altered itself, but could not find a way that was fair in allowing any of us to put forth a candidate. So what happened at that last stage is the part where I don't think we can avoid. If it was fairly embarrassing, other than on the front end, if we go in, and in that particular situation, the two of you preferred a new commissioner. You preferred a change. And for you, if that had been communicated in advance,
I wouldn't say that's a fair representation. I don't know that I preferred a change. I just happen to prefer one of our other applicants over.
All right.
The gentleman is
currently in the position. So, and there's no way to get around that. I mean, There's no way that I like to get around that, because the involvement of all three of us in the vetting and the nomination and discussion and nomination process, I feel, is very important to make sure that all views are represented, that we are, in fact, considering which traits each of us feel is the most appropriate person.
And I get that that's where you're coming from, and all I'm saying is that logistically, Marty, I'll open it up to you in just a second, but I got to make this point. Logistically, if what you're saying were the best way to appoint boards and commissions, which frankly is the most cumbersome process that a board of supervisor goes through. It's not that we have too many applicants. It's not that we have too many people seeking these positions and we got to find a way to figure through. And we haven't even dealt with condemnation commission yet. I mean, we've got boards and commissions that almost literally board of supervisor members are begging people to take it on. Not that we've got this plethora of people applying. But if what you're suggesting were the best way to appoint boards and commissions, why don't any of the cities in Story County follow that model? Why don't any of the school systems in Story County follow that model? Why don't any other counties that I'm aware of follow this same model? And from my perspective, the reason is you're making something that is already really, really hard to get good people to serve. You're making it so burdensome and so cumbersome and so potentially embarrassing that we're going to lose really, really good people wanting to do it. I think that Story County had a great system before we changed it. I think that's where we ought to be. And I sure hope that we don't jump from the frying pan into the fire, which is what I see this proposal. I see this taking something that is burdensome and difficult and now codifying something that is every bit as burdensome and difficult and even more time consuming, in that now you've got people coming, they're going to spend multiple hours over here going through this interview process for the ability to maybe get embarrassed out here in a public meeting. It's been my issue all the way through, Loris. I've been consistent all the way from the very beginning we started talking about this. That's where I am now. Now I'll sit back.
I have a question for you on the process of the way that you prefer about embarrassment. Okay. So you're looking at the chair interviewing everybody and making a nomination, whether or not Marty and I would choose to interview these people separately. So let's say we interview all three. But the chair, whoever's sitting there next year, the year after that, is goes ahead and makes a nomination of a person. And Marty and I, or whoever the two supervisors are, as they
keep considering,
okay, and we reject that person. All right. How is that not embarrassing?
I think that's more embarrassing to whoever's sitting in the chair position. If the chair can't come forward with a candidate that make a recommendation for a candidate that is high enough quality that it's going to get support of at least two of the board members, then the chair is making a bad mistake. But the part of this that you're leaving out, and I think it's a key part, is Deb Shildroth's role in our previous model. And her non-role, I mean, other than being a glorified scheduler, her non-role in this existing. You got somebody with, I mean, as high quality a person as I've ever been around, who's got 25 years of experience. She works with, has worked with, or is working with every one of our boards and commissions on some level. And you're negating the impact that she had in the old system that she doesn't have now. And it goes back to the whole staff versus board conversation that you and I have had.
I believe that we are elected. There are things that people expect when they vote for us, and one of them is for us to actually oversee and handle the appointment of people to boards and commissions. I believe
that. How am I suggesting something different than that?
It's then Deb involved in the process, it's you and Deb, right, as it has been.
You've got a chair and a staff member,
and I genuinely believe that one of the things that we are elected to do is to vet these people and have us handle this, that we don't delegate it to a staff member. I'm not negating Deb's particular qualifications. I'm thinking that we are elected to do some things, and this is one of the things I believe we're elected to do.
Who appoints people to boards and commissions for the city of Ames?
The mayor, but that's already spelled out in advance, and that's the mayor's particular job. The mayor doesn't do some other things. There's a much clearer delineation. I know you've talked before about, you said to me, well, we're not the city. We do both legislative and administrative. All right. So comparing to a city, the city of Ames or any other city, comes back to that particular position. A mayor, one person, is elected to do that. We three are elected equally.
And with the old system that we had, before we put in this new, more complex system, and the old system we had, who appointed people to boards and commissions?
Oh, before?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what happened. It was apparently the board chair.
No, who appointed, Morris?
Oh.
Not who recommended. Who
Vote on it, but...
So back to your point, you believe, and I think rightly believe, that we're elected, the three of us are elected to make these appointments. In our old system, who made the appointment?
The three board members voted on it, but not all three board members were involved on an equal basis in the entire process.
Not all three board members got to make a recommendation. All three board members were completely involved. They control their vote on who gets appointed.
But we couldn't sit one of the possessions, if you will, after talking to this person who helped me work through an alternate proposal, is that we're giving up the ability for all three of us to hear the questions to the applicant at the same time, or hear the applicant's responses, because the questions that we were given by HR were pretty, cookie cutter type of questions. So I actually, in talking to this person and all her experience with boards and commissions, she did point out that having sequential interviews with each one of us individually does allow us to ask some questions targeted toward what our particular interests or beliefs about what makes a good board member are. But we do lose being able to hear that response back and forth. We're going to lose the ability to hear what both you and a staff member is asking, unless the staff member participates in all of the interviews. And I'm very concerned that ends up becoming very close to the new ruling, about saying so and so asked this and so and so asked this.
I'm suggesting that the old process wasn't broken. We tried to fix it, and in fact, we broke it. And if the old process wasn't broken, and it was just that a board member was feeling left out of every step of the process, then we ought to go back to what worked. It should not in any way be taken to limit the ability, or your ability, to go have a cup of coffee at Cafe Diem with anybody who applies for one of our boards and commissions. I promise you this. You go have a cup of coffee with somebody who applies for one of our boards of vision, you're going to learn a heck of a lot more about them than you are when they're sitting right in that chair and we're interviewing them here. And it gives you a great opportunity to really, really inform your vote when the time comes. So Marty hadn't gotten to weigh in yet. I'm really interested to hear where Marty is on all of this.
First off, Boris, thank you for bringing this back to us. I thought what we did in January was done. We were just coming together. We did not know each other as well as we do now. And I thought we did it in haste. And it was had through the course of one of our legendary 4.5-hour meetings. And it's always left me with a bit of an unease and a clunky feeling about it. You had made reference to the feedback you got from the best board appointment. Could you flesh that out for me? I mean, you said you had gotten feedback on the process we did, on the interview process, on the best board just earlier. What was your feedback?
Yeah, and the feedback was actually the commissioner who was not reappointed was more angry just about the vote and you guys' selection of another person as opposed to feeling he had a big problem with the appointment. But I got a couple of other points of feedback from people who were not serving on boards and commissions who said in the past they had considered maybe applying for a board and commission but felt that it was a very closed process and that with only a board chair making the recommendation that they didn't have an opportunity to really sell themselves. Now, Rick has addressed part of that, just like our individual interviews would, to go ahead and take it upon us to be much more thorough in how we're vetting this process, about vetting these applicants, but also what are the needs of it. So that's the feedback I got from the first, from the person who was denied, and then from a couple of people who, as I said, were had at times in the past thought they might apply, but they felt it was pretty much kind of an insider deal to begin with, just because of how it was done. And these were people before you and I came on the board.
I pulled down off our website today. We have 38 openings this year, and we have some currently that will be expiring shortly. I think we find ourselves in what I understand in talking to long-serving county employees is a chronic condition that leaves us a little bit hamstrung as we do the county's business. So the fact is I'm loath to implement anything that's going to cause hardship or an impediment to anybody, but I... What I see here is a little bit of an implementation of a process that has got so many moving parts to it that it just almost comes difficult to implement. And I think that you're asking for a commitment of time of both people on applying or people currently here that I just have trouble taking up.
Okay, and I did think about that. That's one of the other things that the person I talked about is that, you know, that to bring more people into the process, to bring younger people into the process, to bring people in who have families, all of those considerations about how could we make this an easier process for them and still keep it open and fair. And that's what I'm after at is inclusivity and transparency here and giving us at least the opportunity to vet from our own viewpoint. We still have a vote here at the board. And so that is why putting up there about doing interviews either by Skype, to be able to do that. It's actually using a laptop. It's quite easy to do, and I know IT can help with that. We don't have to have that monitor that was up here when we did the hearing on the budget.
What about the
I know. I'm sure it was very odd to be out there and see me be large. So that was discussed, telephone meetings, if it's okay, and with us, and also asking that if the applicant comes in and that we do it in 20 minute increments. Just, you know, that I go in for 20 minutes and leave the room and then you and Rick. So that, you know, because we know that we've got blocks of time where we've got 60 to 90 minutes where we all can arrange to be here at the same time in our schedule. So, and then scheduling with the staff, scheduling is going to have to be done regardless. Now, regardless of what appointment is, process is, if in fact you and I or whoever the other two, the non-chair board members, if we want to interview them. So this person and I discussed that, hey, just bring them in for an hour and a half, and just bam, bam, bam. But for people who can't get in, Skyping is a good way to do it, or a telephone interview possibly. We all know the person or know something about them already. So that can already be done. The point of the discussion has to occur here at the board table, regardless of who makes, and I'll give you this, Rick, okay, regardless of who makes the first motion, for someone, to nominate someone, we've got to have that discussion at the table when it comes to, if there's more than one applicant and there's not an initial first vote, that applicant is the one
that is going to be chosen. It is conceivable that if we have three applicants for something, that we all three could be interested in a different applicant. It is conceivable.
Yes, it is. I guess on a takeaway basis, the county picks us to set up here, and then we in turn have an election ourselves, and we pick our leaders, and I think that has consequences. And the thing is, clearly we have decided who we want to do our business in our absence. We had a discussion today with the Sheriff's Department that was conducted in our absence with the chairman to bring it, you know, on a vetting process to bring it to us for discussion and consideration for an appointment for a position at the Sheriff's Department. Leadership done it outside of this board, see it done here, and I think that we make a decision that our chair should be empowered to do on a decision-making basis things in our behalf. This, to me, is housekeeping. I really have no, I don't see the traction that we're disserved. I sit here and say, as I can clearly show anybody, if you have any desire to serve, we got places for you to serve. So if anybody is sitting out there wanting to do something on behalf of their community, we have opportunity waiting for them. Now, I don't know what else to tell them. In fact, it's on the website, and it is one of the things that Deb Schulrouse has said they're ready to help anybody making application. What else do we need to do? I mean, if somebody's sitting out there with a concern that they're not welcome, that is something that starts with them. That's not something that we're doing. You're not going to change the process here to say that you can't make application.
Well, but there's an appearance of the process.
Where is the perception?
Is it vetting through one person?
Is it here on our board? Is it here within our county government?
I believe so, yes.
Could you point to it?
There are people. I believe there are people who voted for me. I know there are people who voted for me.
Clearly, that is true for all of us. Give me a little bit more.
You want me to run through almost...
You have a belief system. You are very proud of it. You speak to it often. Here is a point in question. Please speak to it.
Okay. Several times I have, over the course of covering this board and having run previously, when discussions about appointments to boards and commissions have come up, I have made comments...
Where do these discussions come up?
Right here at this board table, and I did that right over there in the public, right over there making comments. And one of the things, of course, I raised the issue about gender. I took a look at who was being appointed to boards and commissions. Wasn't that 4 years ago, maybe, Rick, or 3 years ago? I'm the one who actually sat up here and asked about gender. And the next week, Jessica Reynolds came back and said, yes, she's right. Actually, we are required to do gender balance, and that...
And how have we done since then?
Done great.
Okay,
done great since then. But that so raised that. I have raised concerns about where outreach is done because as board members, previous board members have sat up here and talked about how they have gone to people and lobbied for people to apply for various boards and commissions, I have...
Is that a bad thing?
Huh? No, I think it's part of our job also. What my concern was in what the responses that I was hearing from the people who were sitting up here at the time, is it seemed narrow in focus about who they were lobbying, and that in part has to do with the fact of who we all know. And a benefit of a board with very different priorities, very different emphasis, and even very different social and professional circles, is that we have the opportunity to reach out to more people to encourage them to apply. But at the time...
Will we do that anyway? I mean, I would use the compensation board as proof of that. We do that every year.
Well,
the thing is, you reach into the corners of your supporters, reach into the corners of your contacts, and then you bring them, and we throw them into a mix, and we choose.
Yeah, and we saw how the compensation board worked out.
Was that bad?
Well,
one
candidate wasn't qualified, wasn't allowed to sit by law of the original selection.
Oh,
so,
but I would say that
I think we need to vet a little better.
Huh? As a previously elected official, yes, I can see where the conclusion was at, but I don't think that that dismisses him on his merits.
But my applicant, though, all right,
My applicant, though, was someone who was eager to help and serve, who did not have a background and did not know either one of you. And so as I sat there, if you want to talk about the compensation board, my experience with that is that those two other people were known to both of you. One had already served in multiple capacities in the community and even sat on the government restructuring committee. Now you want to go back to perception and in my world, all right? In my world, people look and see, they see the same people getting appointed over and over again to various boards and commissions. They see a closed system. And I think we could go through, there are a couple other people, I can think of one in particular who's sitting on one of our commissions who has done great service to the community for decades. But then there are other people who look and say, if that person's sitting on this, or if that person's applying, I'm not going to be taken seriously. Even though these other people who are applying might bring in a great wealth of diversity of experience and who they know. And that's what I'm after,
right,
Marty.
The other people that are applying, these people aren't applying for us. Are interested in applying. Well, maybe, but they're not interested enough to actually apply. I mean, the first step of being interested is to actually apply. Not say you might apply. Not say, oh, if the system was different, I would apply. It's to apply. It sounds to me like you're making the case that the system that we're in right now and the system that you're proposing would have more people apply rather than less. And I see it completely opposite than that. And I would argue that the only reason you're bringing forward a revision is because you have now discovered that you're going to have fewer people apply and reapply under the system that we're currently in right now. And so it looks to me like you're taking something that's bad and making it potentially worse in terms of number of people to apply. I'm telling you that I firmly believe this proposal means less people apply, not more. So if your goal is to get more people to apply, I don't buy this is it. And by the way, you and I are on exactly the same page. I want more people to apply. You know me well enough to know that I love diversity of thought. I love it. I have my own pretty specific thoughts that I have, but I love diversity of thought. I love sitting with people that I see the world differently than. And so this implication that you're making that all our boards and commissions, since Rick Sanders is chair of the Board of Supervisors, all our boards and commissions are going to look like Rick Sanders. Name one of our boards and commissions that even is remotely, the membership is even remotely cut from the same philosophical cloth as Rick Sanders. There's not one. There's not one that's even close. Our boards and commissions lean closer to you than they do to me. All of them. That's the way our current system is. If we want more people to apply, let's have a system that encourages as many people to as simply apply and get through the process as possible. This isn't it.
My responses would be to come back around and reiterate what I've already said about fairness, to reiterate about inclusion, going out and soliciting. I do agree. I think we have some points in common here. Mm-hmm. One of them is all of our responsibilities to go out and find people from diversity and from diverse backgrounds to apply from these positions. I continue to be uncomfortable, yes, with the past system, but that is, I understand I have proposed an imperfect system. I do understand it.
I appreciate your acknowledgement you're doing something, because an issue with the possible reappointment of what I believe to be as a successful boards person might pass from our mix. And mm-hmm. that clearly is, you know, we've implemented something. I spoke to it earlier. I'll say it again. We did something in January in haste that has a clunky, untenable feel about it, for the fact that I live in dread of the fact that somebody like the person you spoke with would leave us, for the fact that the way we would have a reapplication would cause them to say, if I haven't shown you enough good works, I have to come back and ask to do it again, when they're doing it pro bono anyway. Walked into a conversation last week at Rotary, was listening to two members of our Board of Adjustments say, hey, I got a letter that says after two terms, I got to reapply. That is a narrative of failure.
Can I address that? Because
That is not, had not come up in what I've got in front, but I have been thinking a lot about this. I mean, we know that there is a, we need to find a balance. My concern is, first of all, the, you just said somebody who has served for two terms already and says that I have to reapply. Do we want to think about term limits here? Because my another concern that I, as I said, I didn't put in here is how long do we really have some people apply? Is it an automatic assumption that if they have been already appointed to a board that they get to stay as long as they want to stay?
I see success in my personal life and in my elected life as a parent and as a husband. When I see it, when I'm exposed to it, when I'm in the midst of it, I tend to embrace it. And if I realize sometimes I can overdo it. So I let some things just operate as they are because they, that is success. I think, you know, as you chase success or your version of it, I think we are moving to implement something that really is somewhat untenable.
But back to the concept here about if we continue to just, if someone's applied by one Board of Supervisors board, okay, and then they're appointed for a second term, might be the same board, might not be, depending, you know, okay, but now they're headed into a third or a fourth term. And there's just an expectation on their part that they don't have to do anything or even sit down with the board members, or an expectation that they will be serving again. Yet the world moves on. The needs of the Board of Supervisors move on. The possible needs of that particular department that they serve as an advisor and overseers move on to. And so I'm sad that a person who took that kind of feeling about it being some kind of insult to them, when I don't see asking people who have been sitting and at the end of the term to do something that allows us all to individually, based on what we think may be good for that commission, for that department, et cetera, to reevaluate who's the appropriate member to reappoint, if at all.
My cross-check to that is with these appointments, they're dealing with the public. They set up on our commissions. They'll set up here and render decisions on behalf of residents of Story County. If they do it wisely and judiciously, quite possibly all we ever hear, if we hear anything, well, they did a good job. I appreciate the thought and the work product that they offered up. I get it. Maybe I wasn't happy with the results, but I get it. You also have the cross-check of the department heads who have responsive. I believe you're looking at Jerry Morai out there, has P&Z. You're going to see Mike Cox. I mean, we have respective boards that operate in things on advice and consent to us that you see done well, and their work product represents thoughtful, judicious resolution. So I would have to say that we have the ability to see who's working and who's not. I don't think somebody by serving a multiple set of terms is phoning it in. I think somebody that's giving away their time through the course of a day or an evening, if they didn't have the buy-in to do the job, would probably be leaving us.
Well, and one of the things about, you know, as we come back to who is the appropriate, you know, what makes up a good board member, as Rick and I kind of said, we probably don't have the same definition. I would say, I wouldn't say phoning it in so much, but there does, I have observed for 20 plus years of various boards and commissions in three different states. Okay, is that long term sometimes they get to have such an affinity for the director or the department head or whatever that questions cease to be asked that are really just due diligence questions.
Do you see that here in Story County? Do you have a board that you're speaking to or about?
I haven't had enough opportunities in the last couple of years to observe them. Part of this solution, one way or the other, is to start showing up to boards and commissions on that. So I am putting forth to you a risk, not a definite affirmation here. But
I agree with the risk. It is absolutely a risk. But you make a couple of, I think, blatantly unfair assumptions as you go down that road. First of all, you say it's a risk, but you don't have any idea whether it applies to Storrs County. And as somebody who watches our boards and commissions pretty closely, I tell you it doesn't. We don't have, as we found out last week with planning, and, or 2 weeks ago with planning and zoning, we don't have perfect boards and commissions. But we have boards and commissions that are really, really trying hard. The other one, the assumption you make is that you will automatically get reappointed, and that's been disproven in the last appointment we made. You don't automatically get reappointed. You tend to get reappointed if you are working diligently and the board and commission is moving in exactly the right, or is moving in a positive direction, and not get reappointed if it's not. And that's the way it's been in Storrs County. You go back. Jane Halliburton was a master at figuring out how to get boards and commissions to operate at the highest efficiency. Our asset board, which hasn't been mentioned, has been one of those boards of ours, which, amazing enough, it's not just a county board, it's city and United Way, and now the region mental health system. I mean, pull them all together, and it finds a way to work because it's a fairly easy process. You call it closed, I call it directed selection of who makes sense to be. They understand their own personalities, they understand what their needs are, and they trust staff to identify really solid people, with the board, all three members equally, being the ones who get to make the final vote, yes or no, on any of these appointments. And so it's a system that in Storrs County, unless you've got a board or commission that you can point to and say, boy, this board or commission has just produced terrible product, it's a system that has worked for years and years and years in Storrs County, and we changed it for no reason other than we wanted equal input, rather than sticking with something that worked for Storrs County. And now we're in danger of losing that very thing that we say we want the most, which is effective, diverse operation of our boards and commissions.
When I go back to your discussion on Rotary, when the person made that comment, was the expectation of that person that they would be reappointed again?
They wanted to continue to serve.
Yeah. Okay. So my concern.
What in your mind? To me, what I'm listening to is somebody says, "Why don't you say thanks for your time? Why don't you step aside? Somebody else wants to serve."
Sometimes that's necessary.
The thing is, I come out of the school board setting. There are people that were aching to take my seat. It would not run as long as I was there, because they didn't think they'd beat me, frankly. But now, in my absence, you had a plethora of people show up. You could have said the same over in Ames on their school board. If Mike Esposette and Bill Talbot wanted to stick around, okay, you might have had the very same candidates, but maybe the outcome would have been different. You said here, it happens. It's a sorting process. The public is welcomed, encouraged, and does it.
I think rising to the level, as I think you had pointed out last time when we discussed this, rising to the level of elected officials, however, is not a fair 100% comparison, because these are volunteers who are looking at functioning at a very on a very focused basis. I think part of the reason asset does work so well, in addition to, and here's where I'll come back and give credit to a great administrative team. That administrative team made up of Deb and the assistant city manager, whoever's, Gene Cressy right now. Okay, so, and that is a team that, yes, they work cohesively. But all of the asset volunteers are appointed by the five different entities, and not all of them serve more than one term. And so you have constantly new blood coming through on the asset. Now, it's a large what? There are 15 volunteers appointed, or, five. Each one gets three, right, Deb?
It's about 22.
22. Okay, thank you.
Which one of our boards and commissions do you feel like is not getting new blood on a regular basis?
Well,
I'm curious about that, because I go through our boards and commissions, and you're talking like we have the exact same first people serving on the exact same boards in perpetuity, and I'm telling you, that's not even close to right.
New blood is more than just new blood on that board at that time. I do feel that we I have high regard for the mayor of Nevada, who now is sitting on our VA commission, but he has served in multiple roles in the past, which shows that he's very competent, okay, but at the same time, did we really get truly new blood in? And I understand I moved for Lee with his one term on, okay? My second choice would have been in this situation because of bringing a new voice on who's not participated in any part of county or community government before. This is someone who stepped up because his only effort in the past was Jerry, who had volunteered with Freedom Flight for a long time. That's when I talk about new blood. It's just not the physical moving of a new person in, but it's bringing in people who've all of a sudden found in their life they have an opportunity to serve, okay, in a different capacity, or they're, you know, and that's when I talk about new blood.
Yeah,
so that's
so you have just hit on, and I really appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah.
So we talked about the areas. There is lots of common ground, of course. There's lots of things that we can find to agree on, but you hit on the area where you and I will, I think, adamantly disagree. What I'm hearing you say, and I don't intend to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hearing you say you value unproven, untested, outside the system voice to known competence, high performance. You would pick the one from outside that you don't really know a lot about, rather than the one that you know is going to really serve the people of Story County well.
No, that's not phrasing me correctly.
Okay.
I believe that there are many people out there whose individual experiences, while they don't set what you would put in yours as competent, proven, etc., I believe there's a lot of people out there who have alternate experiences that would bring in still and be good board members, bring in good perspective, and just the fact they're not proven within one set of criteria. That's the difference. I don't want to bring anyone on who seems to indicate from their entire life history and what they've done or not done and groups they've been with and situations they've lived in that would be indicative that there's no competence there. But, you know, and maybe part of this has to do with, you know, I make no bones about it. I'm 21 years sober. You wouldn't want me sitting on any borough board when I was drinking. I was functioning. I was, you know, and so, okay. But, you know, so it's what you do onward. And maybe somebody's got, you know, 10 years, their history until 10 years ago. And so they're just building up and they want to do community service stuff. That's who I'm looking for.
Absolutely. I get that. But I still think my point was valid because you're telling me that you would pick that unproven commodity to give them a chance, to give them a chance to build their thing over, and it's a binary choice, right? It's not, hey, I'm all for inclusion, I'm all for getting a diverse voice, but if you've got a choice between somebody who is unproven, you don't know how they're going to do, and somebody who has proven results, they've proven it time and again, I'm telling you that our job as elected officials, as I see it, is to put forward those proven people to help administer Story County. Well, I know that you and I see it differently. That's what it is.
Well, I just and I'm going to answer the point about even what is proven. I mean, you know, there could be somebody who has worked hard and diligently and been a manager in a private company for 20 years. So, and now has the ability to do that. There could be somebody else who is brand new out of college who is very proven within operating in clubs, et cetera, within college. So, as you don't like me to try and summarize and paraphrase what you're saying,
Jack, well, just correct each other. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, so anyway, that's where we are back to here. I'll make the motion so we can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I move that we adopt this procedure for selection of an appointment on boards and commissions.
Okay, I'm hearing that dies for lack of a second. So where we are now is our existing our existing process, which is exactly what we did for the VA commission, unless we want to visit changing that.
We did something that I think we moved away what I would have not looked at necessarily twice that was working. It served. I mean, we were using a vetting process internally of people with decades of experience. I had faith in other decisions, and I would have Shieldroth as a resource that I can pull off the shelf on virtually any issue that confronts me as a supervisor, and I think I get sound advice. I don't see her input in this process as being any less. I think that we as supervisors have the ability to have input on appointments as we ultimately vote on them, and to say that any one supervisor has more of a voice to that. We have an internal process, as is virtually, and I'll say it about quite a bit, as I see it, as a housekeeping duty vested in the chair of the board as we elected them to do. So I would make the motion that we returned, we will put aside the situation or the process that we have today and return to that which was as we were configuring the board. I don't know how to be more clear in stating it, but I have comfort in having the chair of the board, how it is dutifully appointed, as the election through the process of the seated board, resume the duties of interviewing with Deb Shieldroth any candidates that come before us for our boards and commissions.
Okay, so I'm hearing a motion to go back to where we started 2017, where a recommendation comes forward from the board chair and the director of external operations, and then the full board votes on that recommendation. Now, I will say this, that does not preclude the ability of, if we could move to that, doesn't preclude the ability of any supervisor to visit with any applicant that we have in order to do what you guys are supposed to do, which is to get fully informed. I'm going to assume that you don't want to make that second.
Correct.
So I'll make that second. To move back to the process we had at the beginning of 2017 and ask if there's further discussion. Laura?
I just want to make a comment for future just about we don't have any written delineation about what the board chair does or doesn't do. So don't be surprised if I bring back something later on that's a draft of maybe what we want to talk about
that. That you will.
Absolutely. And I look forward to the conversation. Further discussion on this matter?
No.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
No.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. We move back to our original process of appointing boards and commissions. We are now going to take a break, and when we come back in 5 minutes, we're going to have the departmental report from planning and development. All right, we're back. Departmental reports, planning and development. Quarterly report, Jared Moore.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before I start, I just want to thank my staff. They're very dedicated, and their heart and mind is in the right place, and they bring it every day to do the work that we do, and it's greatly appreciated.
You got a great staff.
We do. Very, very proud of them, very happy. Third quarter report, we're comparing this third quarter to the previous 2 years, third quarter. We look at zoning permits, development permit applications, projects that we've worked on, that we're currently working on, and then the work program items. First one is the zoning permits. You'll notice that we're down a little bit from the previous year's third quarter by one, up by 13 from the 2015 third quarter. Most of those permits are other permits. Breakdown is 16 of those were accessory structures, 9 were fences and decks, and 5 of those other permits, which are show up as red, were additions to single-family homes, and then, of course, 14 single-family dwellings. So this has an impact on the valuation, down 1.7 million in valuation. Has to do with the average single-family dwelling amount was less from the previous third quarter.
Why was 2016 so much of a bump up?
Well, and part of it is there was some ag uses that didn't apply for exemption that were added, which contributed to that increase in 2016. Third quarter, was there a question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it had to do also with evaluations. Because, so you're saying it was related to residential.
The average.
We built bigger houses in 2016.
Right. Okay.
That so contributed to the reduction. And then there were some ag uses that, if, you know, if they claim to be a farm, ag use, there's a process that we had them go through, apply for the zoning permit, there's an exemption application. You know, not everybody does that. Sometimes they submit the application, pay for the fee for the building permit, zoning permit. So that's what contributed to the reduction.
Yeah, but the reality is, I mean, you want to get down to the specific. The reality is early fall 2016, we saw Cameron's estates really get up.
Okay, thank you.
And bigger and houses, and several stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right. So that's the difference.
And that's where I was headed.
Yeah.
There were some of
these.
Okay, thank you.
Third quarter development cases were up by 2 from the previous third quarter 2016, up by 5 from 2015. The biggest area there for this third quarter was the subdivisions. We had 5, and then there were 3 rezonings. The dot map, I love this map, shows you the activity throughout the county. The yellow, which is probably a little difficult to see on this map, most of the single family dwellings are north of Ames, south of Gilbert. There were a few east of Kelly, north and south of Maxwell, and then of course a few subdivisions northeast of Ames. Select development cases, camp adaptive reuse. This is something that was a conditional use permit. The Shipley School, the camps own the school property. It's a single family dwelling. It went through the review process at Planning and Zoning Commission, got to the Board of Adjustment. There were some concerns from the neighbors. They initially requested to do like 14 rental units. After hearing from the neighbors and those in that area, the camps came back with an alternative plan. This item was tabled at the Board of Adjustment's request. And so the current conditional use permit is for 5 rental units. We're going to see how that goes, see how it works out in the neighborhood. There's several conditions. One of those involves the police chief, City of Nevada, did a thorough inspection of the building, which determined that the building was pretty solid and secure, but they are meeting those requirements that the chief put in place. Donaldson rezoning, you recall that was southeast of Nevada, 3-acre parcel. The interesting thing with that is the north third of that, the Donaldsons gave an easement to Conservation Board for passive recreational uses, which kind of ties in with that park to the north. You just took action on Dayton Park, Lohman's 4th edition. The Irons, we thought it'd be interesting. Since that plot was approved, we've reviewed 10 bi-attached and 1 single-family preliminary zoning permit, and we've done those inspections. We've got in the hopper 4 conditional use permits, or excuse me, 4 residential parcel subdivisions, Dixon Jensen property west of South Duff. We're reviewing those right now. There's a residential parcel subdivision submitted by Teresa Smith on 650th Avenue, north of Maxwell, and then Kathleen Beard on 270th Street. And so those will be before you in a couple of weeks. Projects that we're working on, stormwater drainage, erosion control ordinance amendment. We've got the foundation for stormwater drainage. We're trying to provide more clarification as to what information we want applicants to submit when they're submitting for subdivisions, site plans, things that involve conditional use permits. We want to make it clear as to what the expectation is and, you know, what is the existing pre-development site condition, what's the post-site development condition, you know, what improvements are being proposed. We want to see their calculations. This information is going to be reviewed. So this information, we've done a lot of this internally. We're getting ready to sit down with Margaret, Mike, Darren, and Leanne on the work that we've done. We also want to sit down with a small work group, review group. It includes developers, builders, owners, persons interested in natural resources, water quality. And so we want to do all that before we go to the Planning and Zoning Commission with the amendment and then Board of Supervisors. So this is going to be something that's going to be coming in November.
If I understand what part of what you're working on with the amendment is that this might have, had it been enforced, maybe your results at the time that Cameron Estates went in next to Hickory Hill, as an example of where we ended up with unintended consequences with water erosion. Okay. Will this help address that in a future?
That's the goal.
Okay.
That's the goal. That's why we're doing it. So we make things real clear, abundantly clear as to what the expectation is. And we want to be able to look at, you know, what's the site conditions before they do the improvements? What are they proposing to do exactly? What best management practices are they proposing to do to address the erosion and the stormwater issues?
Okay, great.
Trying to make things more clear.
Thanks.
Yeah. Process ordinances. We're working on process ordinances for subdivision, conditional use permit, and variance application submittals. I think previous directors came to the board with a resolution on what the processes were. We think that it's important for persons who are interested in submitting the applications for these things to know what the processes are for submittal, you know, who does the reviews, you know, what things involve resolutions, what things involve ordinances, publication requirements, staff reports that are written. So we're trying to identify what that process is more clearly. And this will be going to Planning and Zoning Commission and the board in November as well. 2020 census, the board appointed a committee comprised of Leanne, Lucy, Deb, Matt, and myself. The Census Bureau encourages the county at the county level to work with the smaller cities really that don't have the ability to review this stuff, the data digitally. And so we sent out a letter to all the cities in the county, including several emails, and we've actually heard from all of them finally. And you know, to ask them if they would like us to review their boundaries, because that's part of what we're going to look at. You know, cities that have had changes in their boundaries due to annexations. We're also going to help with addressing. We heard back from Ames, Story City, Kelly, and Maxwell, and Slater. They have told us that they will review their addresses. And then Kelly, Maxwell, and Slater have told us that they will review their boundaries. So I know I'm talking with Leanne in 2010. I think, you know, the staff did these reviews for these entities, you know, simultaneously. So, I mean, that might take place, but this is what we've heard so far. So, just to give you an idea on timeline, the materials will be provided to us February through April of 2018, and we have 120 days to respond to the information. And then the census, through February through September of 2018, they process it, and then August and September, we've got 30 days to, they'll kick it back to us, we'll review it. We've got 30 days to appeal anything that we don't agree with. And so, like I said, I think we're on course with this process, and I'll make sure that I keep you updated as we go along. We are joining Keith at the Homeland Security Conference on the 18th of October. We're going to present some information on our debris management site selection. The department is, we've done annual inspections at all of four mobile home parks. We started that last year. It looks like a few of the parks forgot that they needed permits for new units and for accessory buildings, so we reminded them that we do have a process in place for that. Country Living has added some RVs, which they could probably do that through a conditional use permit process. So they have not gone through that, so we've reminded them that we do have a process in place. This is something that goes to staff, it gets reviewed, conceptual review, we've got a planning and zoning commission, and then board of adjustment. So we're dealing with that. The feral cat issue, from what we've seen, has decreased. We haven't noticed a lot of cats. Rolling Hills have made some adjustments to their policy. They actually try to take photos of all the property owners' cats, so they have a record of it. And then apparently there was a tenant at Country Living that had some issues with feral cats, and that person has moved the park. So
issues as in with feeding them?
What's that?
Issues as in with feeding them?
Feeding. I don't know if they were residing there,
okay,
but that person is no longer there. Emily and Amelia will be attending the APA Midwest Regional Conference in Dubuque. They leave Wednesday night. That's a great networking opportunity to network with planners in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And they've been working very hard, so they're going to enjoy themselves, but they're also going to learn a great deal, too. We've been talking about the agenda and making sure that we've got coverage on things that we need to attend. Work program items, we're working on the study area, North Ames, south of Gilbert. We're looking at a lot of different levels there, including land use, soils, zoning, current designated areas, trying to look at busing, utilities. We're going to reach out to the school districts. And so we would like to get something to the board probably within 2 to 4 weeks on that.
Okay.
Bernal, things are coming to a crest there. We've taken care of a lot of the things that we could administratively. The biggest issue there is we're trying to figure out some options for the board to consider with regard to the stormwater drainage and the flooding. We know that a study needs to take place. We've identified some resources that we think could be some options as far as grants and loans possibly, but we sat down with the county attorney's staff and Lisa last week, and we've got some information that we're going to share with the board in a few weeks. I did take the flood administrator certification test Friday.
I do.
It was challenging, and I'll find out in 2 weeks.
So right.
Hope for the best. Emily continues to work on the natural resource layer. She's got two counties down, completed, and Franklin and Grant. We're trying to work on the areas that are the busiest, the most activity. There's a lot of ground there to cover, but she's doing a great job, and she's continuing to work on that. Construction, demolition, landfill, it seems like this is one thing. You're talking about things that Darren has been working on. We've been working on this for a long time. It's coming to a head. We are working on an ordinance that will address what citizens need to do if there's a disaster, how to sort material, what needs to be sorted, what we'll accept, where the materials need to go for us to pick it up, our contractors, so that we can get reimbursed from FEMA. We're working on amendments to the actual plan that we have in place. And again, this is something that we're hoping to have to the board shortly as well. We've looked through the land development regulations, and we're probably going to be proposing some amendments. You'll see those probably toward the end of this year, first part of next year. Ames River Fringe, just kind of an update on the Auburn Trail. That was North Ames, Hyde Avenue. Got approved by the city council. Went to the city development board. It was an 80-20 annexation. The
the statute says that 20% of the land area can be non-consenting property owners when the goal is to ensure that you're not going to create islands or you're going to have boundaries that make more sense. Well, it was denied by the City Development Board. They didn't see it that way. They didn't think that it, that the boundaries were concise. And so the City Council has informed Hunziker that they can submit their voluntary annexation without the non-consenting at their discretion. Frieder Land Development, that was before the board, City Council, Ames, and Gilbert, just to accept the application. That application did get submitted by Mr. Friedrich, and the City Council took action on the 26th of this year, of September, and asked the planning and housing staff to start the process to review it. So we've had some discussions with their department, and likely this item will be at the Planning and Zoning Commission November 1st, which means it'll likely be before the board on the 14th of November.
We're going to have to talk about traffic control at Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver as part of this.
I was just going to bring that up, because yep. As I mentioned before, it's my question for Jerry. Is there any way, as we are working on this with Ames, mm-hmm. that we can put... that we can look at the traffic at the same time? I mean, because this, if I'm putting this location correctly in my mind, in my visual mind, that one corner, southwest corner, okay, would be actually Friedrich property, would be taking a little chunk out of if we did lights or something, correct?
Correct.
If you did lights or a roundabout or...
Oh, the roundabout, sorry, yes. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that roundabout.
It could be anything. Yeah. But the reality is you've got to do some kind of traffic control there before any more development occurs. But especially with more development occurring, and it's a conversation that I believe needs to happen between the City of Ames collectively, all their different departments, Story County collectively, including Jerry and Darren and the Board of Supervisors, and the developer in question better be part of that conversation. And all I'm suggesting is we need to put that on the fast track so that that conversation is occurring at the same time that the rest of these are occurring, so that there's an understanding of what's going to happen. And quite frankly, probably the church, the Irons, and Mr. Borgmeyer better be pulled into the conversation, because it's impactful of all of those.
And you're right, roundabout, and I...
Well, whatever, there's not one solution, there's multiple possible solutions, just something you got to get solved.
Right. Okay. In our discussions with the planning staff at Ames, they have acknowledged the need, you know, the interest and the need to look at the traffic. This first involves a annexation, because the current designation is priority transitional residential, and he's requesting urban residential, which makes that prime to annex. So I think they have an interest in looking at the annexation issue first, but
Ames can serve that area on a gravity sewer line. They can serve that area on a gravity sewer. So I've had informal conversations with the city manager of Ames and with the developer in question, and let them know exactly what I just said here, that one of the things that I believe is going to be important and that I'm going to push with the board is that we have a full conversation of what traffic patterns look like and are going to look like in the future out there as part of this conversation.
And because it's in this gap area, it's not exactly in the targeted area that the city has identified, that there will be some costs incurred by the developer on extending the sanitary sewer.
There's really no way, even though we would pull the developer in and all of those property owners into the discussion about either a roundabout or some kind of traffic control or whatever, there's really no way for us to ask for the developer to pay for the roundabout, right, or help contribute to it?
Anything is possible for us.
Oh, okay. All right.
Everything starts with discussion, right?
Well, let me edit that so that doesn't come back to haunt me on video, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the educational.
Get your red pen out.
That's right. Okay. Sorry.
Any more questions on that?
No, thank you.
Thanks. Complaints. This one I talked about the last time I was here, and I think we're coming to a head on it. Joel Rasmussen, property east of the Milford School, which is now a single-family dwelling. He has removed most of his inoperable, unlicensed vehicles. We're still kind of working with him on some items that are on the northeast corner of the property. But he's been pretty receptive. Initially was not, but as time went on, he
became we've been dealing with this for 10 years.
Jerry, you have a power of persuasion.
The next two came from a property owner north of Maxwell in the Iowa Center Village, complaining about abandoned mobile homes. That was the complaint. There's actually one mobile home and an accessory building. We did sign out a letter to this property owner so that we can start some dialogue on, you know, what the situation is, and then we'll move from there. This person also had a complaint about the property to the north of there with regard to a mobile home, the keeping of horses, dogs. He had two dogs and then junk. I didn't see that there was junk per se. I don't know that there's any issues with having two dogs. It's an A1 zoning district. You can have livestock. So, and the mobile home, we have a permit for it. We have a zoning permit for that. So that was part of the complaint.
Did it just look like the livestock had some room to move around? I mean, was the complaint just they were there?
You know, it's probably about a 3 or 4 acre parcel. The horses were west of the unit, and I saw a couple, 2 or 3 horses, and horses are considered livestock.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. And then we had a complaint from a property owner south of the DuPont plant on Lincoln Way. There was a concern about steam venting, and it had to do with how they were starting up the plant, and we've contacted the police chief, Martinez. This plant's in the city of Nevada. He was very responsive, contacted the plant manager, and within a day, that issue was addressed.
Nice.
This is our work program. We carry forward several items from 2016. We've been working very, very hard on those things. We want to get those things completed. We've got some things going on 2017 items, but we really want to focus on the 2016. We worked on, and the board adopted an ordinance for agritourism. We have an ordinance now for special events. Like I said, we're working on the Ames River Fringe, land use, construction, demolition, landfill. We're working on that. Fernald, I took the test, and we're reviewing the ordinance. So we've got 5 additional things that are on our schedule for 2017. We are working on those things, but we really want to try to get the 2016 things completed. And then once that happens, we'll really be able to charge forward. So that's what I have for you.
Super. Question for Jerry. Good job, Jerry. Any questions?
No,
Jerry.
Thank you.
Don't let anybody tell you that the goatee's not looking good. Next is update on the website refresh project and direction regarding initial design. Alyssa and Barb. Good afternoon.
Hi, good
afternoon. You just barely made it.
No, it is afternoon.
I wanted to start out with just a brief overview of where we're at on the website refresh. And we've split out a subcommittee, a design committee. So Emily and Melanie are here to talk about their work on that committee. But really, these parts you're all familiar with. So we've established this staff committee, and we've designed the subcommittee. And we have taken some surveys. I don't know if any of you participated in that, but then we did select our vendor Civic Plus, and we have signed the contract, so we're all good to go with that. We've been assigned a project manager. We've had one meeting with her so far, and she is given us assignments to submit 7 to 10 pictures by Friday that we want to start out the initial design of the website with. So we'll be going over those here in a little bit. I'll let the design committee take care of that. And this one I think we should probably have next to the website pictures because it talks about those. So let's just skip that one.
That one will come back to us.
Okay. But based on the surveys that we did, we've felt that this is what the homepage should have on it. And I just wanted to let you know that there were 48 responses to our surveys, which we were pleased with. 39 came online, and 9 were paper surveys. We had boxes around the building. So we were excited about that. So these are the things that the surveys indicated that should be on the homepage. Now, the homepage will be much scaled down compared to what currently is, simply because we feel it's too cluttered with menus and things. But these are the questions people have asked. Well, I can't find agendas, or I have to drill down too far, and by the time I get there, you know, my mouse is someplace else. So these are tentatively what we'd like to see on the homepage. And if you have any questions or don't think that's what you think the webpage should represent, feel free to speak out or let us know.
Contract information, is that supposed to be contact information?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
The transparency box?
Yes.
Okay, that's not listed here.
What do you mean by transparency box? Do you mean...
Okay, up in the upper right-hand corner.
On our current website?
On our current website. It's where people can click right away to go to notify me, to submit a request for, you know, a document or something. Those, according to the demos that we've seen, that's on every website right at the top. That's
okay,
so I shouldn't worry, it's not listed here.
That's okay, thank you.
Template. So whatever page you're on, that will be at the top.
Okay, great. And one of the suggestions was, you know, with like, I believe it was permitting and different things like that. There could be something that says, how do I? So if there's a few, you know, how do I get a permit? So that can be on the homepage if that's something. That's an option and has been suggested. So I know they're looking at that.
Okay, super.
And sometimes that's a part of the search bar, too.
Yeah,
like on websites, they'll have the search bar, and it just in kind of, you know, semi-transparent letters, it says, how do I, or I'm looking for.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep. Any questions on this page? Okay, we'll go to the next one. And this is something we don't need an answer today, but something to think about. So as we're moving through the project and we complete it in April, how much time do you want us to spend on staff working on the page? For example, you know, changing the images or adding more text or just doing updates. We've got a scope from no time to 2 hours or more. And this would be per week. So that's something to think about, and we thought we should bring it up. I know the last time we did our website redesign, we had left it up to each department to be in charge of their own page. Do we still want it to be that way, and how much interaction do we want in making actual changes on the page? I guess at this point we don't know. Depending on the seasons and what's going on in that department, there'd be more or less time. So something to think about. Do you have any questions on that?
Yeah, so one of my issues is, and clearly not the only problem with the website that we have, although I continue to maintain, the website that we have today is 1,000 times better than the one we had in 2010. And hopefully this new one that we're going to is going to be 1,000 times better than the one we're in right now. But one of the functional issues that I think we've had is this concept of farming it out through every department. Too many chefs in the kitchen spoil the stew. And so I believe we ought to be talking about moving back to a central department that maintains our website for us, and what kind of staffing implications that's going to have for us. The other thing I would say is my initial reaction is it's 2 hours or more, because we're going to try, I mean, I hope our goal is to try to keep this thing as fresh and relevant as we possibly can, and in my mind that's 2 hours a week or more in order to do that.
This is focusing on the design. This is not putting the text-based information out on each department's website or the individual. This would be, if you're going to change the look of the web page or different things like that. That's my understanding of what we're
absolutely. But I'm picturing all of that residing in one place, and at least right now in my mind, that one place is in IT with a person who has responsibility. Part of their week is dealing with these things, where we maintain some consistency. Now, I'm counting on you guys to say, no, that's not the way we should go, or yes, that makes sense. I just think one of the issues we've dealt with in our current incarnation is this idea that everybody's going to do it themselves, and we've got, 17 different ways of doing things and 17 different timings for getting things done, and it has not seemed to come together very well.
I actually got on my notes on this page of either communications or IT. As far as the decision about if we do some revamping of communications to, where do we find it? But so one of those two dependent on that. And so I agree 2 hours or more. I think that's how you keep it fresh.
Have you seen any uniformity in the departments even using that, which is available to them now? Or in some departments taking advantage of it and others not? As far as being able to promote and refresh their own portions of the website,
some do it pretty regularly. There's others that don't.
So I suspect if you were to grant it, you would probably continue that which you have.
And I think there needs to be some consistency as far as how the pages look. You don't want a different. You got to keep the whole. We do a redesign of the website. You want all your pages to kind of resemble the state. It's got different information. The departments are responsible for the information that's on there, but the actual framework of that, you don't want to click on a different department and it looks like a completely different.
I guess I come down on the side of more of a uniform top-down approach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's what both of you were speaking to. For the fact that if you got people that aren't doing it, you would like to say, okay, we have a brand new website. It should look uniform and welcoming.
Right. There's certain things we don't want them to have the ability to change, basically the content. But I agree with Rick, and one thing we've seen in IT, and Paula handles this for the most part, is, well, I didn't attend the training, or so-and-so used to do it, they're no longer here, I don't have time, can you do that? Or, it's been 6 months since I've made a change, I forgot how to do it, can you do it? And Paula's more than happy to help out, and she enjoys that kind of work. So. And I wasn't here when we decided each department should handle their own page, but I can see where it was good thought-wise, initially, but actually applying that, it hasn't worked out so well.
Okay. Thank you.
So anyway, we just included this slide, and Leanne put this together. She couldn't be here today, so we brainstormed on Monday, and then she put this together for us, so she did a good job. So we'll come back to that maybe after the website is completed. And then I think we should talk about the page that we skipped, and you'll notice that in we've got some website examples now, but we've noticed on a lot of the websites they had a slogan or some type of phrase to characterize their whatever they were talking about, like for McKinney, Texas, unique by nature. So we thought maybe this might be an opportunity down the road to have a slogan contest or something that the employees could participate in. If we wanted to include something like that, if you don't feel it's necessary to represent our county with a slogan, that's up to you. But it was just kind of interesting to know that a lot of the websites had that.
But it can be added later by Paula.
Or, whatever we decide to do.
Sure.
Okay.
So, I would say don't underestimate how extensive a process that would need to be.
I remember Ames going through it with the smart choice that they ended up with and all of the other, fortunately the school districts and whatever, but yeah, sure. Quite extensive. Okay.
And now I'd like the design committee to, we looked at these six website examples, so if you'd like to talk a little bit about each one and what we decided we liked and didn't like.
Maybe they're a little hard to
see. You should be.
Can you make them bigger? Oh, that'd be great.
They should come up. Everything's working.
Oh, good deal. Okay.
Start by introducing yourself for us.
I'm Melanie Worley with Community Services, and I'm on the design subcommittee of the website refresh committee. And so we Civic Plus told us we could look at any websites that we liked because they can imitate design. But we ended up basically picking from other Civic Plus websites because they do focus on government entities with their websites, and we thought, well, they have a lot of experience, and there's quite a diversity in what they do too. So we thought we had a good pool to choose from. Here's one, Corte Madera, California. We liked the overall design we thought was very clean and more kind of simple than, you know, it's not too cluttered. Mm-hmm. We've got here all. What's this? Okay, well, this isn't exactly. These aren't. So they have the same, similar kind of menus that we do where it's called nesting, where they. And we're not super in favor of that. So we'll show you an example of some other menus that we liked. But like this here was kind of nice, like a big prominent box with some main choices. Search bar up here, also very prominent. You'll see consistently with all these websites that there's a lot of times just this large background picture that scales, and it either stays static or can be changed, but it's not like a small little window. It just scales across the whole web page. You look down here, they have just very simple a news flash area, calendar, and then a couple other features. We're getting down to the end there. Any other comments you had? Just go to the next one.
Not on this one.
Okay. Here is another county in Iowa, Washington County. And let's see if there are menus. Yeah, so these would be more examples of kind of like what menus we'd like to go toward. They're called, super menus or something like that. And so they pop up, and all your options are right there. You don't have to click onto submenus. And we just think that this will be more user-friendly to the public, that they can see all their options instead of trying to hunt and find them. We also liked there's just a simple, you know, banner with the name up there, search bar, prominent picture. Mm-hmm.
The three options here, online payments, transparent government, and notify me. We looked at a lot of several websites that had like 8 or 10 options. We felt like that was a little overwhelming. So we liked the simple, simple high-level categories on the website.
One thing we also liked about this website was in this bottom right corner, they have a little feature just giving some brief history and overview of the county there. And we thought that was nice to just kind of introduce to a new person to the county. What are we about? Where'd we come from? So anyway, that's one feature. This next one is probably the overall favorite of the design subcommittee, McKinney, Texas. Yep, so they also have the slogan here. They also have this very prominent search bar. How can we help you? Mm-hmm. They have the super menus. And then if you'll notice that menu bar stays fixed as you scroll down, so you can access it as you keep going. They have those buttons here too, which could be any number we want. It could be 6 like that, 3 like the other site, whatever. We liked a calendar style that was more similar to this that actually shows a visual of the month, and then off to the side it highlights the days that there's something going on. We liked that visual. But you'll notice, too, with most of these that the background color is white and then just has a few colors, and we like that fresh, clean, bright look. We feel our site is a little too dark. So there's that.
Here's Greene County, Ohio, just kind of showing you. So we just like the overall design here. This one we felt did have too many buttons there. Mm-hmm. Thought that was a little too cluttered. We still just like kind of the clean look. And once again, the big menus. And we'll show you one more. So here's another feature that is a possibility. They have a fixed bar on the left. This might go kind of, Laura's with like transparency things, mm-hmm. like how to contact, you know, get different feeds or, you know. So they've got the super menus too, big picture buttons. And then once again, we liked this calendar format of highlighting the day something's going on and then listing it out here of what specifically it is to, and you can click on for more information. So once again, white background and just crisp, clean colors.
Let's move on to the next slide. Yeah, so Leanne did a lot of work reaching out and trying to get pictures from different sources. She reached out to local photographers, asking if anyone had any images they'd be willing to share for our website. We did get two responses on that, and we did offer up the opportunity for photo credits. That's something we are looking to add to our page. She did put some social media postings on posts on Facebook and asked county employees if they had any pictures. We didn't get a ton of results, although we had a quick turnaround time. So, again, images are things that we can change over time. So we chose, I think, I'm going to say there are 9 of them. Anyway, we have to submit 7 to 10 photographs to Civic Plus by Friday. And these are the ones we chose. The design subcommittee went through hundreds of pictures and chose probably about 50. And then the committee narrowed down to their favorite 7 to 10 photos. So we have those here. Again, these are for the mock site. We want it to look as good as possible, but knowing that we can also change the pictures out as we find more quality images.
And I just wanted to point out, too, we're not sure why we didn't get a lot of response. It could have been the short timeline. It could have been... maybe professional photographers were afraid they wouldn't get photo credit. But if you look on our current website and just hover your mouse on the photo, we have a feature that shows the name of the person that submitted that photo. So it does give photo credit. Every time a photo changes on our homepage, the name will pop up if you put your mouse toward the middle and just hover it a little bit. So I'm not sure if that was a concern or not, but that's a feature that I think is important and that we really like. So if you want to show the pictures.
And one thing, when you're looking at these pictures, we want to make sure it resembles Story County. So to you, does it look what you feel the county?
So,
and these are just mocks, right?
No, these are actual photos.
No, I meant about for the mock-up of the website, that we can go in and change them. Mm-hmm.
Right, we'll be able to update that.
These are just kind of our initial sampling, and we think that Civic Plus was also trying to get a good feel for what makes up our county with these initial photos too.
And this one, we're not quite sure if this is actually Story County or Boone County.
Yeah, let's all do Ireland or whatever.
Were there any photos submitted just out of the first group that had people in them?
There were some, yes.
Okay. And we'd like more with people in them.
Currently, yeah, we have that currently. So Ricky said you prefer we don't have Ida State in there or Iowa?
No, there was somebody one time, I want to say it was Bruce Braley, had a picture of a farmhouse representative of where he was from, and it was from Ireland or something
right.
like that. That was making a bad joke.
It was a
fact
photo, yeah.
Yeah, we don't want
that.
Yeah.
And
that's the goal. We wanted what is Story County?
You said Leanne is the one who reached out on this. Okay, I'll send her a couple of suggestions of other places to reach out that maybe,
Yeah, so I think it would be important. I really like the images that you guys have here, but I think it would be really important to have some kind of festival represented, maybe an Iowa State event represented with actually, there are people who live in Story County.
Yeah. People with steps. Usually what tends to happen with photographers, and the amateur ones, they leave out the people, and people are what make photos interesting.
And I love some of these photos.
Yeah,
gorgeous. Couple with the wind towers and things like that are really, really cool. I just like to see us get more diversity in those pictures.
Yeah. Actually, I want to show you something real quick. We agree. We just... with this quick time, we didn't have some real good ones. The ones they just weren't. But I just want to quick show you that last website that we hadn't shown you. But our committee agreed that we thought this is a city in North Carolina. But as this scrolls, though, this is one of the very few that doesn't have people in it. Hopefully, it's coming here.
There we go.
But they've got some really nice ones.
Yeah.
With people, you'll see it as it changes here. Like here, people sitting at a cafe. We liked these shots.
Yeah.
We liked these kinds of photos, too.
What but I would say as a mix, I mean, not exclusively these kind of shots, but
we
need to incorporate it in. And no matter what we do, go up just a little. Do not graphic our name. Like that.
Don't worry. That's already been addressed by the committee. They hate the logo, but they like the photos.
And there are, I'll communicate with you guys. I'll send in. There are some other thoughts I have about just in photos, and then plus the fact, hopefully, we were able to get maybe an intern to work with Leanne who might be able to take some photos. Well, take that new camera.
Yeah, we did talk about wanting to get like a photo from each of our communities, the downtown area. We just didn't have one from each right now, so we didn't want to include one in that.
We're going to do is moving toward a static photo on our landing site, or we're going to move it toward a scrolling photo.
That's a decision that needs to be made.
Okay.
That's my understanding, is that you can have just one, or you can have it rotate.
Yeah, so the value in just one is it's not distracting at all. It's not, the value with more is you get to show more. I was just going to say, if we have one, then it needs to be a picture or a photograph that is representative of something like this, right? That would have a few of these components in it where we have, if it's one that you guys go to, it needs to represent what we say Story County is, and there's nothing closer than our logo if we're just going there.
So then we have the timeline, and I know that's pretty small. I've asked the project manager to make a few changes, and one of those would be in the red, about midway down the page. I've asked her to push that out a week simply because one of our deadlines is November 24th when we're going to be closed. So we pushed it out a week, and the same thing with the Christmas holiday, it kind of coincides with that. So she's now working on reworking this for us. What she has to do is then go back and make sure that the resources on Civic Plus is in are also available. So I haven't gotten the new schedule, but this is a tentative one for now with those two being pushed out a week. So we're still shooting for the go live in April. I know that seems like a long time, but there's a lot of things to do between here and now. Any other questions?
Yeah, Barb, going back up to phase one, over the right under the red, and it says incomplete online forms. So you're supposed to, so it's not only a deadline for the photos, but what does it mean by online forms?
That was contact information, stuff like that.
Oh, thank you.
General
okay.
housekeeping.
General, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions? You guys are doing a great job. Thank you for your work on this. I'm excited to see what we end up with.
Thank you.
What direction do you guys need from us?
I think we've gotten some, like, with the pictures. Getting a few more with maybe some people. And, I mean, we just needed to get a feel of where we didn't want to head down the wrong direction.
Right. Yep. We wanted to know that you approved of the direction we were going.
I mean, if you saw anything that you didn't like, we're hoping that you voiced that concern.
Or if there's any design, specific design elements that you really want to see on the refreshed website.
Yeah, so let's just go through one at a time, and we'll give you our thoughts, which will hopefully give some direction. So for me, of the six examples that you have up there, I would be McKinney and Washington, Iowa, were my two favorites. I like fewer choices on the front page rather than more. I really like the prominent search engine right in the middle of the page that says, you know, how can I help? What are you looking for? Let's see. Like the photographs, would like to see it. Find some with more action in them, people in them, and trying to think what other thoughts I have. The rest of it looked really, really good to me. I think it, from my perspective, it's a two-step process, right? It's getting to the point that we have something to go live, but also having our plan for how it doesn't automatically start to gather dust after day one. That's it for me, Loris.
McKinney or Green County are the two for me.
Do you like airplanes? Was that Green County?
Yeah, it was Green County. Yeah, I'm taking the trip. No, I liked both of them. McKinney, what I really like is that it takes the photo and really it walks you in and enters. And I prefer that those photos, that there be rotating photos. I think that helps engage people right away. As I said, I'll send some notes or whatever about possibilities of photos and photo shoots, but I agree with Rick, you know, and fortunately we can always change it out as the seasons change. That's a big deal, right? And the thing about Green County, even though it does have those eight buttons, is that the way this is laid out, and then down below with just a few of those five boxes, I mean, I'm pulled in right away, and I take a look, and I say, oh, I know what to find. McKinney, a big one is, how may I help you, right? I mean, you know, so that's what I like about them. So you can tell I went for the minimalism of visual on both of them.
Yeah, and so for me, Green County, I see Green County as too busy with the, how many is that, eight little circles. That's too many, and just the difference. So for me, when pictures start rolling, it's distracting rather than engaging. Isn't it interesting that that's engaging to you and it's distracting to me? Because when I go to the website, I'm going there because I want to find something, and I don't want to, what was that picture that I just saw? Uh-huh. I want it to be. That's my ADHD, though. So.
Well, okay. Marty!
Thank you for owning up. It hasn't been addressed, but how old is our logo? Anybody talk about that?
2008.
Yeah.
We
discussed that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what did you come up with?
Our hair.
Yeah.
The community did discuss. That was brought up. I think the majority of the... That's the feel. The majority of the committee wanted to keep that, partially because of the cost that it does change and the time that it takes to change.
We have bashed ourselves all over the place, I get that.
I mean, you know, I think, especially all our vehicles, the decals would have to change. Uh-huh. That was a concern. They felt like they just got everything all changed to the new logo. So,
I'm glad to hear that you talked about it.
We did have that discussion.
If you're going to go to this much trouble, would that be because it would be a component of who we are?
Absolutely.
And clearly, it's our website. Is that something that somebody wanted to take a look at? And if you've chosen not to, so be it.
In fact, I have a comment for Barb, because Barb brought it up, and Barb had some points about this. I mean, I heard what you were saying in part about it. It looks a little... casual or
we're called it cartoony.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
It's not as bad as the last one, that caribou or whatever.
Right. That yeah.
You couldn't even.
I mean, I like the design and the shape, but I think maybe even the green just makes it. It could be a deeper green or something. The colors are a little cartoony.
I will tell you that down at ISAC's meeting in August, I was out in the parking lot and I was looking at logos. I just as I was walking through. Ours looks great compared to some of them, believe me. I'm talking about a cartoonish. But yeah.
I think Ms. Worley makes a very good point on a clean background. I like the fact that what is on it is the important part, not what's behind it. And that's clearly all in. I guess I'm okay with moving photos. I don't share your distractions. Washington County, because it had a rural flavor, go figure. And after that, I'm going to be led on this. Obviously, your commitment and enthusiasm is rather infectious because you guys spoke in a way that you've done and spent a lot of time looking to bring what is best. I'm looking forward to your work product, and if this is an indicator, I think we're going to have success in April of next year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did you guys get anything from us?
Yes.
Anything to finish
yourself?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Yep. All right, public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. That's enough. Anybody? Okay. Liaison assignments. I've lost track, so I'll start with Laura.
Sure. Herta, I want to thank Herta publicly again on the record and the Herta staff. They did a great job in preparation for the conversations that we tried to, that we scheduled for Monday and Wednesday last week in the smaller communities. Attendance, unfortunately, was almost non-existent. So we look forward, how do we get out information and how do we get feedback from people? But I just really appreciate everybody who participated in it. Deb offered, and I'm glad we didn't tie up her time that way because it turned out. So heard the board meeting. The situation in Boone, services continue to be delivered very smoothly, which is nice because then it means there's been almost no impact here in Story County. And just positive discussions about how they can get shuttles going back and forth between Ames and Boone. The monetary situation has appeared to move forward with Herta's attorney, the city of Boone city attorney talking, and it looks like there's going to be some type of financial resolution. Boone thinks they're going to make an offer to the Boone County Transit, which is actually a private nonprofit, to buy out the building for just whatever that agency owns. And so then Herta itself, why would it impact us, as we were worried we were going to have to come in and pick up more costs. And so that that looks positive.
There were multiple outstanding bills.
We still, however, Herta is going to be responsible for the deferred maintenance that will show up in the future when we have things go. But it looks much, much more under control. And I'll leave it at that.
Good morning.
As I'm missing out on a United Way meeting, and if we step out of here quick, I can get the end of it. I hope we have kicked back our Board of Health meeting from today till next Tuesday, and I'd like to thank maybe one announcement we'll be able to make is that all the residents have left Crestview. And as our fervent wish, and we think we are at the very end of it, so I see that as a success on a county basis. I have a two-day event here. As we've had a studies group on the Senate File 504 for our mental health, and we are going to meet and go over the collated proposals and our action as the state is tasked not only itself with proposals on going forward as the law is now configured and additionally going to each region, and we will see how that shakes out. I look forward to that deep dive for Thursday and Friday. What else we got cooking? Going up to Roland tomorrow night, talk to their city council. You went to McCallsburg, you said earlier today. That's part of what we do. People don't see that unless you're at these meetings. I mean, people think this is all what the job is. Clearly it is not. And with that, I got a meeting.
Absolutely. So motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.